Speaking of a Jersey guy, Brian Geltzeiler joins us now. Brian, a frequent guest of ours. You can follow him at hoopscritic on Twitter and follow his site, hoopscritic.com. Yesterday, he tweeted out he thought Jeremy Lin would have a big night. 38 enough for you, Brian?
Yeah, it's all good. How you doing today, all right?
Doing great, man.
All right, good. Yeah, you know, it was Jeremy Lin had a heck of a night last night. You know, the issues with him this year, to me, have primarily been because he doesn't have the ball in his hands, and he's used to having the ball in his hands. He's that kind of player. The Rockets have handed the keys to the whole operation of James Harden, and there's nothing wrong with that. Fact of the matter is, when they brought in Jeremy Lin, they had no idea they were going to have James Harden on their team. However, when you look at how James Harden played last year with Oklahoma City, where he shared the duty of having the ball in his hands all the time with Russell Westbrook, and at times Harden played on a wing and was lethal on a wing and was fantastic. You think the Rockets kind of diversify their offense a little bit after seeing what they saw out of Lin last night, because Lin is really struggling as a spot-up shooter on the wing, where if you have the ball in Lin's hands a little bit more, kind of what Oklahoma City did last year with Westbrook, and Harden playing on the wing, Harden can do a lot of damage on the wing. So to me, I think you're going to see a sea change in Houston and how everything operates, and a lot more productivity and efficiency out of both Lin and Harden.
There's a lot of teams like Houston right now that seem like they're really trying to find their way, work a lot of things out. I don't think they will resemble the teams come March as they are now.
You're still early. We're still at the quarter, Paul. Okay, and what that essentially means is that you're going to have a lot of teams that are mushed together. But it's funny because when you look at the West and you see this group of teams that are kind of mushed together, and there's really seven of them. You're Utah, Dallas, Minnesota, Denver, Houston, Portland, and the Lakers. And I'll ask you one question. Which team there at the beginning of the season you didn't think would belong? And it's obviously the Lakers, who, you know, really to be down on that playoff bubble, even at the quarter pole, is a little bit of a head-scratcher. But, you know, when I look at how the West is going to shake out, I do think the Lakers will be one of those teams that rise to the top. You're going to see better performance out of Denver. I think Dallas will be better when Dirk comes back. I'm a little disappointed in what I've seen out of Minnesota since Kevin Love has returned. I thought I'd see a little more out of that. I think Houston's not going to stay where they are. I think they're going to sink some, and I think you're going to see Portland sink a whole bunch. But you have 10 playoff candidates in the West for what's going to amount to 8 spots. The 4 I don't think you worry about at this point, obviously, are San Antonio, Oklahoma City, your beloved Grizzlies there, and the L.A. Clippers.
This morning I tweeted out 165 wins out of the Western Conference to 138 for the Eastern Conference. Not only is the West the same old West, it may be the best West ever.
It's a fantastic Western Conference. I don't think you can argue with that. You know, here's the thing about the West. The depth is absolutely phenomenal. You have a lot of teams there that are decent teams all on a similar level. And when you look in the East, you have some teams in the East that are flat out horrible. You know, you have teams in the East here. I mean, you look at 5 teams in Washington, Toronto, Cleveland, Detroit, and Charlotte that all would be competing for the bottom spot in the West, where the West, you really only have 3 of that level, Sacramento, Phoenix, and New Orleans. And that makes a big difference in terms of looking at wins with one conference versus the other.
Brian Geltzeiler, our guest. You can follow him at Twitter, a great follow, at Hoops Critic, and you can follow his website, hoopscritic.com. Last night in the NBA, how does San Antonio, Brian, how do they just keep having that star? They have the Gary Neal night. There's somebody almost every night that has a big game, triple-double for Tony Parker, but almost every night they seem to pull out a game like that. That was Houston's game at home to win, and they didn't.
No, here's the thing with San Antonio. San Antonio amazed me last night because they went 47 minutes and 30 seconds not playing a lick of defense. Not playing a lick of defense, okay? They have a great defensive possession, a last possession of regulation, where Danny Green forces Jeremy Lin into a 24-second violation. They come out for the overtime and stifle the Rockets. And that's the thing about the Spurs. They can turn it up when they want to turn it up on the defensive end. And when you look overall, defensive efficiency numbers might not be wonderful in terms of the course of the entire season. They can get those half-court stops. I look at that team this year. To me, I have them coming out of the West right now. I think the Lakers, beginning of the season, as soon as they made the coaching change, I walked away from that because I felt like Brown would have been a decent coach for them despite what they felt. I look at the Spurs right now. The Thiago splitter improvement has been absolutely tremendous. Danny Green's a year better. They're doing this right right now at 18-4, and they haven't had Kawhi Leonard for half the season. Parker's a superstar in this league. Tim Duncan looks 5 years younger this league. I mean, he's a top five in the league in PER. It's unbelievable how well Duncan's playing. And I think the Spurs, with their depth and with Popovich, you know, doing his thing, I think this is a team that is remembers what it was like to get beat 4 games in a row by Oklahoma City last year. They're going to play a little bit differently in the playoffs this year. You know, Pop in the end last year, Brett, here's the thing. When push came to shove for Pop in the Oklahoma City series, he only had 7 guys he could trust. I think that's going to be more like 9 this year. I think it's going to make a very big difference for the Spurs in the playoffs.
And you, we talked about the Lakers. You referenced the Lakers, and you think they will be there at the end. But they're 2 weeks out from getting Nash back. Play along with me on the timeline. 2 weeks out from getting Nash back. There are problems defensive. He's never been a defensive player, even when he was young and healthy. So 2 weeks out, 2 weeks from getting him back, 2 weeks to really for him to really get acclimated. You know, they're losing time. I know there's still a lot of time, even with that time frame, but at what point do they have to get it in gear and win the proverbial 13 out of 17, 13 out of 16?
I will tell you that. I mean, they could put on one of those streaks in February. I think they're fine to slide into one of those bottom 4 seeds. I think they have to do it a little sooner than that if they want to get into one of the top 4 seeds. You know, I mean, they're 5.5 games behind Golden State in the 5 seed right now. You know, again, it's early. We're at the quarter pole. Plenty of time to make up that room. But I think the point that you allude to, which is an interesting point, is that there's no appearance when they're playing on the court right now that things are turning around anytime soon. And the defensive point you make is a big point because a lot of people are pointing to the return of Steve Nash. Nash is not a guy that guards anybody. And their problems, you're absolutely right, And their problems are defensive. And again, the defensive efficiency numbers aren't bad for them. Okay, but the fact is, the fourth quarter has been terrible for them. You look at what they've done in the last week, between the Orlando game, the Houston game, the Utah game. They're not getting stops anywhere. And here's the thing, the biggest guilty party of it's Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant's running around in defensive possession like a chicken without a head. Dwight actually got on him the other night because he's leaving his man, and his man's killing him. They need to pull it together a little better defensively, and that's where you look over on the sidelines, scratch your head a little bit, and say, hey, is the guy they need to get them with a great defensive team approach on the sidelines for them, Mike D'Antoni? I don't think it is. And I think you don't have to look any further than up the L.A. coast, the Golden State, to see what happens when you have a group of guys that aren't wonderful individual defenders, but embrace a team approach that a coach puts forth, like Mark Jackson has in Golden State, and see a very good defensive team. The Lakers need something like that. Had it in Mike Brown, don't have it here in Mike D'Antoni, and it's going to be a problem throughout the course of the season and a big problem come playoffs.
Pau Gasol, does he finish the year as a Laker?
You know, it gun to my head, probably not, and I think that's a mistake. I look at what D'Antoni's doing here, and it's the round peg square hole theory. I think you have to look at your talent and make sure your system is designed for your talent. The fact that you have a system that is so rigid that you can't adjust it to account for two skilled bigs, highly skilled bigs, like Pau Gasol and Dwight Howard, is an enormous problem. Because Pau Gasol, and granted, he's not what he once was, and he's weak defensively. He really has become I watched him a few months back playing Game 7 of the 2010 NBA Finals. His best player on the floor in the fourth quarter of Game 7, and not only on the offense, but on the defense, and he was phenomenal. You just don't see that at a Pau anymore, but he's still Pau. He still can score inside. He's still a great passer. He's still, you know, we saw what he could do and who he could be 5 months ago when he pushed the U.S. to the brink in the Olympics. So I think you have to find a way to get that out of this player. I'm not sure D'Antoni's going to do that. I'm not sure D'Antoni wants to do that. And that's why I think you're going to see Pau moved out sometime around the trade deadline to a place that wants him a little more than the Lakers do. The only problem I will tell you in that respect is that the Lakers put a large value on him and are going to want a lot for him. And I'm not sure he's as well regarded around the league as they would like him to be based upon the fact that his plays dropped off some and his contract's still enormous.
Toronto a good landing spot?
It could be. Here's the thing. I just don't see the Lakers hot on Bargnani. I don't. I don't think that's a guy that you know, Mitch Kupchak's looking at and think that he's going to come solve problems. You know, Bargnani is not. He's a guy that's an offense-first guy, and he hasn't been a good offensive player. So I don't know if you're the Lakers, if that's the guy you want to run
Brian,
and grab.
But isn't that D'Antoni's system, offense-first?
It is, but Bargnani hasn't been a good offensive player, Brett.
Yeah.
He hasn't done it. He's been bad. He's missed a ton of shooting percentage low. I don't know the number off the top of my head. His shooting percentage is still low. He just, he hasn't, you know, he's a guy that's supposed to be a long range shooter and he hasn't done it. I do know, I am well sourced on this. I do know for the fact that, they, you know, Ryan Anderson is the guy that the Lakers want in the worst way. New Orleans has no interest in Pau Gasol. I have heard that, you know, the Bulls do have a lot of interest in Pau Gasol, but the Bulls would have to make a deal real sweet for New Orleans to want to send Ryan Anderson to L.A., real sweet, because Ryan Anderson's the guy who's played great for the Hornets, who they just signed, who they love, who I could not see them really being inclined to trade pretty quickly, and the Bulls would really have to pony up for Gasol, and that would mean Taj Gibson. That would mean the Charlotte number one they got in the Tyrus Thomas deal. That may mean the best player in Europe, Nikola Mirotic. It could mean, you know, that could mean a huge package, and if you're the Bulls, and it's Pau Gasol at this stage of his career at $19 million a year, and puts Jerry Reinsdorf in the luxury tax, are you doing it? I don't know.
One more thing on the Lakers, and then we'll get to the hometown team, the Memphis Grizzlies. You said, and I agree, Pau Gasol's not the Pau that he used to be, that we knew here and even in his first few years in Los Angeles. Is Dwight Howard what we think he is?
Not right now, but he will be. I think you have to understand that Dwight is, you know, Dwight's an incredible athlete, and one of Dwight's great assets is his ability to get off the ground. That ability is not there like it has been in the past. Dwight came off back surgery. It was very important to him with his new team to start the season. And frankly, it may have been smart to keep him down for a couple of weeks, make sure he was in full peak condition before they brought him back. They brought him back to play from day one. He has been playing himself into shape. And I think part of the other problem is that with Dwight coming off back surgery, it would have been wise to economize his minutes a little bit, not run him past 30 minutes a game, 35 minutes a game at the early stages to make sure he was rested. The Lakers' bench is so weak, they don't have that option. And now that D'Antoni's here and has no use for guys like Pau Gasol and Jordan Hill, it's going to make the burden on Dwight Howard that much more. So I think Dwight Howard will certainly get back to that athletic point. He's a young guy, and I see him getting there, but I think it's taking him a lot more time with the Lakers because of the Lakers' circumstances.
Saturday morning, we woke up. The Grizzlies were 14-3. The proverbial, if the playoffs started that day, the Grizzlies would have been the one seed. That night, run into the matchup problem that continues to be the Grizzlies versus the Atlanta Hawks. Lou Williams couldn't miss a 20-zip run for the Hawks, and a thumping they put on the Grizzlies, 93-83. And now a three-game road trip, and all the way down to what, the three or four seed, just like that for the Grizzlies. Where does the rest of this December go for the Grizzlies, and what's the league reputation on the Grizzlies?
A couple things. Let's put the three seed into perspective, Brett. And the way I put that into perspective is the fact that they're tied in the loss column. Okay, the Spurs are technically two games up. They play four more games.
I love it, Brian. As a baseball guy, I love the all-important loss column.
Loss column matters. So, in terms of us addressing that seeding, I think you have to say that. But yeah. The reputation around the league for the Grizzlies is that of a real tough team that no one wants to play because they're big physical animals, and this is a team built for playoff basketball. The two bigs inside, Gasol and Randolph, is the guys that are meant for playoff basketball. When I look at the Grizzlies this year, the thing that jumps out and absolutely shocks me about them is the play of the bench. Jared Bayless wasn't a good player anywhere else. He's been productive here. Maurice Spates, Doug Collins couldn't wait to get rid of him in Philly, did a great job filling in for Zach Randolph this year. He's been very productive off the bench. And, you know, Minnesota was a team last year that had no wings. Okay, they couldn't stand Wayne Ellington, couldn't get him out of town fast enough. He's been a nice wing. He's been a nice bench shooter here. So you combine that with the fact that Quincy Pondexter has done a fantastic job filling in for Mayo. You got one of the more productive benches in the league. You look at that starting five, it's been together a while. Conley's doing his Conley things as a stabilizer on the court. You know, Gay and Randolph, we have rumors of a strained relationship. Those guys really play very well together on the court. And you can't talk about the Grizzlies without talking about Marc Gasol, who has been bar none the best center in the NBA this year. He's been absolutely outstanding. This is a team, I will tell you, this is a team that it would not shock me to see them go to the finals and maybe even win a title. That's how good the Grizzlies
are,
Brett.
Whoa. Go to the finals and maybe win it. Wow, that's up there. I will say the Western Conference Finals, I could sure see that. I don't know about the NBA Finals. You say two big men, I say four, and you mentioned Maurice Spates, and I give you Darrell Arthur as well.
I think you can give me Darrell Arthur as well. They have to get Arthur back, and in the type of shape that he needs to be in to be productive for them. But if you can keep Arthur healthy, here's the thing, what makes Arthur a huge key for the Grizzlies. Look up and down any team in the league that you want to, and they're all playing small ball fours out there, guys that can stretch the floor as a big forward. And that's not Zach Randolph's forte defensively to get out there on the perimeter. Darrell Arthur can do that. And they need that. He's an important player for them, and he's a guy they have to have to stay healthy. You hear the enthusiasm in my voice. I love what I'm seeing out of the Memphis Grizzlies. They're a surprise to me that they've been this good so far this year, but everything I see them do from a success standpoint is sustainable and translates to the playoffs. And you can't say that about most other teams in the league that have had real good starts.
All right, tell me where it hurts. Tell me a weakness that you see, or weaknesses that you see.
You know, I just don't know about Bayless as a long-term backup for Conley. That, you know, it's bench stuff. You know, if Ellington's not knocking down shots, he's not a ball that much, of much use. And the fact is that, you know, there's certain injuries that they can't sustain. If Mike Conley goes down or Marc Gasol goes down for any length of time, yeah, that's huge trouble for this team. Huge trouble. They can afford to lose a wing, because that's how much confidence I have in Pondexter. I think Pondexter's an excellent player. I mean, one of the better bench guys in the league. I think they can afford to lose a wing. I think they can even afford to lose Randolph for a stretch of time and be okay because of what Spates and Arthur give them. I think that guys, if they lose Conley or Gasol, especially Conley for any period of time, that, make no mistake, Brett, that's the straw that stirs the drink for the Grizzlies, Mike Conley. Mike Conley, he's that stabilizing factor out there. He's the glue that pulls it all together.
Yeah, and I don't want to make too much of him, but for the Western Conference Finals, for late May, June basketball, we talk about the four bigs. I like the six fouls that you're going to get in real bump and grind late May, June basketball. Nothing offensively and nothing for a lot of minutes, but I like the six fouls you're going to get out of a Dottie. Go out there and draw a bruise.
I don't disagree with you. I think Haddadi is a guy that, you're right, for six fouls and a going, and he'll defend a little bit. The problem with having Haddadi in for any kind of long stretches of time is you're literally playing 4-on-5 offense.
You are.
And that becomes an issue. And that's one of the reasons you don't see Haddadi get more minutes. But he's a post defender, and I'll tell you where Haddadi becomes interesting. And this is something to watch, because with where the Lakers may end up falling in the playoffs, they are going to be in the first round against one of these top four seeds that you see right now if they're a bottom 14. So if you end up drawing the Lakers in the first round, then Haddadi starts to play a role, because that six foul that you commit on Dwight Howard, which is 12 free throw attempts, which probably only translate into at best 5 or 6 points.
See, I don't accept in the East, switching to the East, I do not accept Miami by acclamation. I think they will be there, but I think they will have to earn it just like they earned it last year, Brian.
Well, I, you know what? I happen to agree with you, and I will tell you this. My East version of the Grizzlies right now is the New York Knicks. I mean, the Knicks have impressed me beyond belief with what they do. And here's the thing. They're a team with Anthony at big forward who can match up with all the other teams playing small and athletic.
They
can't guard him. He's a really tough matchup. But because of Chandler, and because of Kidd, and because of Felton as a pick-and-roll threat, they can do it playing slow. They can do it playing playoff tempo. So you can match up with these other teams that want to get out and run, but you can also slow down the tempo and do your thing. They're one of they're at the low end, the league in pace. The Knicks play a slow brand of basketball, but they can match up big, match up small. You know, everybody made fun of the Knicks in the offseason. Look at all the old guys you went and got. Well, you know what? Last time I checked, when you're going to build a championship contender's bench, you like to do it with old guys. Old guys can play those bench roles. And that's what they've done here. The Knicks' big vulnerability is the fact that they need Jason Kidd desperately, and he's 39 years old, and he's a guy that could easily get hurt. And if he gets hurt, they would have no chance against Miami. With Kidd, they have a chance. Listen, I still think Miami would beat him in a playoff series, but I do tell you this, Anthony tends to rise to the occasion against James. That will be a very interesting matchup, a big forward in that, and with the way the Knicks have played so far, and Chandler has been absolutely outstanding inside, not only defensively, but he offensively is a pick-and-roll threat. It's been terrific. You know, the Knicks, as a healthy team here, and keep in mind, we're looking at the Knicks, you know, tied right up to Miami's top team in the East. They're going to get Amon Shumpert back, who will be their best wing defender when he walks on the court. And they're going to get Amari Stoudemire back. There's another weakness in the Knicks has been the issues that they have scoring with Anthony on the bench. That won't be an issue anymore with Amari Stoudemire back. He'll fit in just fine as a sixth man for them. Knicks are real good, man. That's going to be very interesting to see what happens with them in Miami.
It will be. When will Derrick Rose be back?
You know, it's funny. I have been a big proponent, Brett, of sitting him out the whole season, because I felt like the Bulls, with how they built their bench, didn't want to make the playoffs. Now, they don't want to make the playoffs, and they want the lottery pick. What the heck are you going to risk Rose for? Mm-hmm. Now I look at them playing a little bit better, kind of in the middle of the mix here, and if you look up in March, and they're sitting at a 4 or 5 seed, and the East is kind of wide open,
you gotta
I think
go
you
for
could
it.
See him back by March. You got to go for it. You got to bring him back.
You got to shoot the rapids, yeah.
Listen, if you're sitting 7 or 8 and you're going to be fodder for Miami in a first round, you're careful. But I do think with the way they're playing right now, you could see him, and I didn't believe this earlier in the year, I think you could see him back by March and make a push. Because here's the other thing. If you're the Bulls and you have what you have asset-wise, okay, and I talked about it with suggesting a Pat Gasol deal, but you have Gibson signed. You have Marodic stashed overseas, who's an excellent player. You have the Charlotte one from the Tyrus Thomas deal. You have assets, and if you know you're going to get Rose back, and there's an opportunity to get a big-time player out there, you go make a deal, you bring Rose back, and you give it a run. I know your bench stinks, but you give it a run, and you see what happens, because you don't know when the chances come up. They thought there was going to be a chance last year, and there you go, Derrick Rose in the first game of the playoffs blows out a knee. So when you have the chances there in your hands, Brett, you go, you give it a shot when it's there.
Tour de force performance today, Brian Geltzeiler. Thank you so much. You were terrific.
Brett, it is always my pleasure, bud. Reach out anytime. It's a lot of fun on your show, pal.
Happy holidays. Be safe, okay?
All right. Thank you for doing yours, pal.
Thank you very much. Brian Geltzeiler, you can follow him on Twitter at Hoops Critic. You can follow his website, hoopscritic.com. He knows the National Basketball Association. NBA Finals. I'll sign up for that. Give me some of that. Wouldn't you, David Basham? Give me the finals now.
No question.
It doesn't matter against. It doesn't matter the opponent, does it?
Oh, I could care less about.
You know what the National Press Corps would do, and we would fall right into it if it should some way. Well, even if it's Miami, if it's New York, I mean, it's going to be that city versus country thing, and we'll get all into it and get all mad like we did last year at the Clippers and T.J. Simers, and somebody will pop off, and we'll go very parochial, won't we? It'll be one of those deals. Sign me up for it. Sign me up for June basketball. I've always said I want to leave the golf tournament after a full day out there and head downtown to the NBA Finals. I think that's when the schedule pretty much plays out for the finals. Might be the next week for the U.S. Open in golf. Brian Geltzeiler, terrific, from HoopsCritic.com. You can follow him at HoopsCritic. When we come back, we'll play a round of high hard ones. David Basham against me. Bashing Stats on Sports 56 and 87.7 FM.